Off the ball. Rugby.
I'd love to start a dog bone Joe McCarthy and go, well, we're picking power and physicality here. Yeah, and put Tyburn in the back row. I think the line-out is something I'm always banging on about.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome along to the Koi Gig Podcast. Cathy McNamee with you here to take you through all the action from the weekend's football in what has some surprising results, to say the very least. I am joined on the line by Karen Duggan to look through all of the weekend's fixtures. Karen, how are you?
I'm very well. I think we're both happy campers this week.
Yeah, surprisingly happy campers.
Surprisingly happy, yeah.
I wasn't expecting this to go exactly the way that it did. I mean, you obviously had a great signing when it comes to the January winter morning bracket, I suppose, in the fact that we're still kind of relatively early on in the signing window. There's still some opportunities for teams to get in under the radar, but you can already see the impact that these signings are having on the WSL, whether it's yourselves, whether it's Liverpool as well.
Liverpool, I think Liverpool are the biggest turnaround just in terms of performance difference between the pre-signings and the post-signings. Now, maybe it'll prove to be a one-off, but they were like a different team this week.
Yeah, they definitely were. And hopefully it's not a once-off for the sake of the title race, because it has been very entertaining so far to have that kind of bottom of the table, who's going to be the ones that gets a random win. As it turns out, it was most of the bottom of the tables managed to get themselves a few points on the board this weekend.
This is the thing, this is the most interesting part of this weekend, because really at the top of the table we saw City go farther ahead, but at the bottom what we've seen is Everton and Leicester very much get pulled into the battle with West Ham and Liverpool. It's no longer, I think, one of two who'll go down there, it's one of four. And based off performances and how things have been going, I think Everton just aren't getting the results that some of their play deserves, and whether they take solace from that or whether it goes the opposite way and they start to get dejected, they could be in for a tough second half of the season.
Yeah, I definitely think they will. And I mean, looking at the top of the table, we thought things were pretty much sewn or like finished up whenever we came for the Christmas break. Now it seems even more certain, especially when you look at the way that they're playing. But it should be an interesting one at the bottom. Shall we start? We'll start in the semi-middle top of the table, because I want to talk about Arsenal beating Chelsea. I think is my right. And this was definitely not a result I expected over the weekend. I mean, it's a little bit too little too late, but I think considering how Chelsea have faced it off against Arsenal, to do it in their backyard, to kind of, I suppose, get rid of maybe some of the nightmarish results that we've had against them over the last couple of seasons, this was really important. And it's really important as well to have someone like Beth Mead in there getting what was a very well-deserved on the score sheet and providing assists as well, considering the fact there's a few rumours floating around the place that she's not going to be there for too much longer.
Yeah, and you know, we're starting to hear rumours about Caitlin Ford as well, and thought she was very lively. Similarly, our own Katie McCabe has started randomly popping up on my algorithm as having interest in America, but they very much played as a collective at the weekend against Chelsea. I think Sleggers got her tactics right. I think Chelsea really struggled to manage Russo dropping into the 10. I thought she was really crucial to a lot of the build-up play there, and she was just clever how she drifted from the centre-backs into midfield and, you know, on the blind side of the Chelsea midfielders. And it was a good game. I mean, it wasn't that Chelsea rolled over, but you have to say on the balance of things in terms of chances created, Black Stenius could have had a few herself. I think Arsenal definitely deserved it. You know, they had the balance slightly, the balance of possession away from home. How often does that happen? I know Stamford Bridge is a bit different to your usual home, but Chelsea, while they kind of went out with a whimper in front of goal, you know, they were getting into certain positions, but in terms of actually really testing the Arsenal goalkeeper, I don't think I remember too much for the Arsenal keeper to do.
No, I don't think there was a whole lot. And I know they don't play as many of their games at Stamford Bridge as maybe like Arsenal play the Emirates and stuff, but it still was a first away win in 8 years for Arsenal, which sadly there was a few of the first wins in 8 years happening over the weekend, but we won't talk about the men's side of things. But you know, in terms of they've been able to get draws and stuff, but they've never been able to, I think, have a comprehensive win either. In that, as you were saying, Chelsea didn't really look like they were going to hammer in a boatload of goals. Generally, we've seen these matches between the two teams have produced like 3-2 results, or ones that are relatively tight, and you think it's going to probably, like, a draw might be a fair result at the end, which that wasn't the case in this situation. And it also comes in a week where Arsenal are playing in that Champions Cup competition this week, one that they got forced moved to London because of where it comes in the series. In terms of the WSL, you know, originally I think it was supposed to be on the East Coast or the West Coast of the States. Far away, one way or the other. So they probably would have been feeling in a relative high, in that that's a celebration of the fact that they won the Champions League, and it might just be the sort of kick that they need to keep going and, you know, actually secure that Champions League spot. Because even though this is a great result, I don't know, does this team have the consistency in it to do the sort of run that they did last year and end up in that final?
No, in terms of Champions League, I'd be very, very surprised. But in terms of how they attack the rest of the season, a point behind Chelsea now, Chelsea who were the dominant force for, what, 5 seasons, and now all of a sudden you're saying, if we catch Chelsea, who have, you know, slipped up this year, are Man City going to be as consistent as Chelsea and have a 5-year dominance? Very unlikely. So in terms of switching the mentality of, for all of the teams, that Chelsea can't be caught and Chelsea are just going to continue to be this dominant force like we've seen Lyon be in France, it's no longer the case. Even though it'll be Man City that will win it this year, if Arsenal finish ahead of Chelsea next year, I think Arsenal kind of fancy themselves against City. They'll, you know, I think it changes the mindset and the how teams will approach the league. They will see it more as an even playing field. Now, I think Chelsea will continue to make strong signings. I think Thompson will be in her second year. Carpenter will be in their second year, that they'll bed into the team better. Girma was a bit off the pace, I felt, at times. She sold herself for the second goal. She's still young, you forget that. And James might be fit for longer. Kerr might be fit for longer. So they're still going to be there or thereabouts. But I do think they didn't have that aura yesterday against Arsenal. And I think that bodes well for the opposition.
Yeah, well, I think that aura has definitely been fading a little bit for a while.
Yeah, we said it all last season. Like, we didn't enjoy watching Chelsea play. No. We just knew that they'd win. And I think a lot of the teams that played against them knew they'd win. And that was the difficult part. Whereas if that's kind of gone, it just opens things up a bit.
Yeah.
And it will lead to more entertaining matches like we got at the weekend, because teams will start to go for it a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely been something that we've commented on for a long time, but I think last season they managed to win dirty in that it like wasn't particularly enjoyable to watch, but they still managed to get it over the line. Whereas you see a lot more of those sort of performances from City this season, and they have, you know, Bunny Shaw, they have Miedema, who looks like she's clicking back into place after her ACL injury, and it's just another sign of how long it actually does take you to come back from that sort of injury, no matter how talented a player you were before. You'd even argue with the likes of Beth Mead as well. She started off quite quickly, but then has faded a little bit again and is now looking like maybe coming back. So, yeah.
And Williamson has picked up more injuries and wasn't herself really at times too. But I think you're right about Miedema. I think in terms of mentality, what you mentioned there, that's a huge thing. Jeglert said it after the game. He said, we're finding ways to win. He didn't think that the game against London City was particularly pretty. It was very entertaining, I have to say, for us. It was very, very entertaining. But he just said he was proud of the winning mentality. And I think you could see it in the way that they've started to celebrate the goals. I think they sniff that they have it now. I think they really, really believe that they are champions in waiting. And it's really hard to argue with it, because London City, Lionesses, again, they were good in this game, but Man City were just like a good bit better.
Yeah. At times. Well, like, you can't, with the sort of firepower that they have, you can see them dropping 9 points over the rest of the league and like what is left there. And I can't actually see either Chelsea, Arsenal, or even United going on a run that's good enough to, you know, keep those points. Like, we're on the next weekend of match days is 14 out of 22. That's not a lot of games left, you know, like 8 games.
Yeah.
And you're trusting that City are going to drop points in 3 of those minimum. You know, it seems very unlikely, considering
City just need to get through the next 2 weeks.
Mm.
City have Chelsea and Arsenal. If City can get through them, honestly, even with 2 points, to not lose, which means those teams don't gain ground on them.
Yeah, they're fine.
I mean, that's really game over. The only thing is that City don't really love to sit in and see out a game. But if they score first in any of those games, I see them winning it. Because then they've got Leicester, who are really, really struggling. Villa, who kind of went back to the way they were at the start of the season before they had that big result against United. Spurs, their manager was quite critical of them, saying that they are, well, not critical, but realistic, and saying that they are a long way off the top teams. Mm. And if he's saying that, then Spurs are going to go into that game believing that. Then they don't play United until the end of March, and it should be all wrapped up by then. And then last three. It's really the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Should tell.
Well, I think when I was looking at the fixtures just after the kind of January break, funny enough, the London City Lionesses game was the one that I thought could be a bit of a banana skin for them, just with the win. And it was very close to being it. Obviously, Bunny Shaw popping up there in the 86th minute to get the winner. But, you know, I think if they had lost that game, we probably would have been questioning them going into these Chelsea and Arsenal games a lot more than we are at the moment, because, again, they've managed to withstand the pressure. London City Lionesses have proven them a bit of a slippy team for a couple of different clubs this season, and as we know, can sometimes go all out on the goals and not so much on the defending side of things. So there is an opportunity there for teams.
That was it, just for the first goal. Like, I think London City had been doing well to defend, and then all of a sudden they got sucked into pressing them, and then you had Hasegawa and Blinkhilde Brown, just a simple 1-2 in the middle of the field, it opened the pitch wide open, and then Carolyn came in, Scott inside, used her pace. Like, they didn't leave too much space in behind, but when you have someone like Carolyn who can come in off the wing and do that, and you have Hemp doing it from the other side, she just can't afford to do it. And I love London City Lionesses in a way that they don't do it. They had plenty of chances. Aslani had a huge chance that just had a bobble at the end that could have leveled things. Goodwin, God love her, she couldn't buy a goal in as much as she tried. She had three.
She was trying so hard.
And she was getting herself in all the right positions, and she was using her strength. It was just that final piece of the puzzle, particularly thinking the one she got in behind, and she tried to wait for it to go onto her right foot, just needs to smash it with her left. But her first season in the WSL, you know, she's a young player. She is a handful, and she's keeping big names out of that London City team. Now, we know that they've made huge signings too, so I have to say fair play to her. And Godfrey, similar, she's 20. She scored a great goal for them to get them back into it. They just don't have the experience at that level yet. They're in eighth now. I'd be surprised if we saw them in eighth next season. They'll definitely stay up, obviously, because I'll speak about the bottom four, but...
You're surprised in the sense that you think they'll go down a bit, or that they'll go up more?
No, I think they'll go up.
Yeah.
When they get the experience. As long as they don't do anything mental, like continue to change their manager if they don't win everything in within a few games.
Yeah, that was baffling to not understand at all, but...
Yeah.
I suppose Kang has shown herself to be ruthless and going out after what she wants across multiple different clubs at this stage, so probably shouldn't be that surprised. What do you think about the stuff about her kind of buying into these FIFA competitions and providing prize money? You know, the FIFA argument for her contributing to this Champions Cup was that, well, she's not involved in any of the teams that are going to be competing. But I saw Tom Gary had a great piece in The Guardian today talking about
it. Is it just representative?
That, you know, she may not be involved, but Gotham are. And so say, you know, when it comes to player transfers, or like if Gotham win it, that's $2.3 million, I think, that they get. So she's going to know, in terms of a negotiating side, you know, what money is going in there. It's getting access to these things in a way that potentially other teams aren't.
Well, look, you can look at it one way. Getting involved with FIFA is always a bit icky, but if you look at it from her perspective, is it just as good business? Is she just a step ahead of the game? She knows that the main driver of growing women's sport is backing and putting money behind it, and her bringing that into her own clubs by whatever means necessary. Can we argue it? It's the way the landscape of football is going.
I know, but I think, like, if you were to have, like, I don't know, Kronk or Bowley or someone sponsoring a competition or putting significant amount of money into it, and then also, like, she obviously donated, I think it was $30 million to the US Federation in terms of helping to develop players there, and then that was turned into an institute that I think is literally called the Kang Institute. It just, that one, I think more people could get around, but this one, like getting into bed with FIFA, not even that it's grim and everything that FIFA has done over the years, but just the fact that, like, it's a club owner sponsoring, putting money into FIFA-run competitions. Like, it'd be absolutely, I totally...
It should raise more eyebrows, and it should be like a bigger deal. But in terms of what FIFA have done in the recent past, it's like a drop in the ocean.
Oh yeah, no.
Probably you'd love enough people to be in a position to challenge it and put their money where their mouth is and say, we'll go off and we'll do something different. But that's not the position that they're in. She is carving out, I don't know what you'd even call it. She's just... She's a dynasty, I guess.
I think that's what she's aiming for, is a dynasty.
Yeah, and I don't know.
I just wonder if, like, you know, if they're opening these sort of gates to her now, and she has
will
never...
Will there be any stopping it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I don't think... It doesn't seem like she doesn't want to not own more clubs and all that sort of side of things as well.
All that FIFA care about is getting the money in. And she's the person providing it.
That's very true. That's very true. Well, we've enjoyed what she's given to London City Lionesses and the league for now anyways. And as you say, I do think this summer in particular, she's going to bring in some more big names to the league. I did wonder, with all the chat about Trinity Rodman, was she kind of one of the people that was trying to lure her over to this side of the world, whether that was with Leon or with London City, would have been quite interesting to see. But she is staying in the States for now. Do you know there's a clarification basically that for the new rules that they've brought in over in the States about how you can get over the salary cap and stay in the league. Mm-hmm. And one of the things is that you had to be ranked in the top 40 of the ESPN top 100 best players. And I find that so funny because I created that list whenever I was with ESPN. And I'm like, the fact that that's now like become a defining thing.
You run the NWSL.
Yeah, I knew this.
You do.
Yeah, I knew this. If Trini Robin wants to send me a little check from being the top paid female player in the world, thank you for my work.
Now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, I'm not, wouldn't say no to it. okay, let's look at your Manchester United, because they had a very impressive win against Aston Villa with 4-1. Probably a result we would have expected with the way United have been playing this season, but a good one for them to get considering some of their performances just in and around the Christmas winter break.
Yeah, considering their performances in and around the winter break and the fact that they started to slide kind of directly after Villa beat them earlier in the season. That was such a disappointing loss, you know, when they were quite dominant. And then they obviously had to go into Europe, and then Man City battered them, and then Wolfsburg beat them well, and then they kind of struggled a little bit. So in term, I know that Sleggers was talking about the turnaround from when Arsenal came in back after the break. I think this is be kind of a similar thing for United, and with the signings that they've brought in, I think, again, I don't know if they have what Arsenal have, but I think they have more than what Spurs have. And the fact that, you know, Skinner, we've criticised him enough, but he was willing to make substitutes in the 60th minute to make an impact. You know, United were in the ascendancy, but they needed a bit of a spark. And they got it. I mean, Jess Park's been outstanding. We expect her to come up with the goods. But I think just Turland coming off the bench, and obviously you can get a reaction one way or the other. Schuler coming in, big name, and she has to probably sit in the bench and wait for her chance to come in. And that's what she did this time. A bit like in the men's as well, you know, that you have someone who's now maybe an impact sub, and whether they take that as a positive or they don't is a sign of the player. But it's good to have players to come off the bench. And yeah, it was a very, very good second half performance. I'd say Villa were kind of hanging on for a good while, and then United kind of turned the screw a bit.
It definitely has been a criticism of United in the past, and it's definitely one that I've made on the podcast, and I think everyone's agreed over that.
I think they
haven't had the squad size to have those impact players. So having them that can come on and turn the game on its head a little bit, or just even for United to be able to capitalize, because obviously, you know, they scored in the first half but then conceded very, very quickly. So the fact that they were able to get like three back to back like that and you know, not fall into old traps which has got them before, I think definitely important for how they want to go forward if they do want to keep chasing. I mean, definitely, I think Mark Skinner, who is someone that I have been quite like critical of in the past, less so I think this season, but definitely in previous seasons, I felt that he's almost gone out very hard on the players whenever he's talking about them, and maybe just not taken enough accountability on his side when it comes to either recruitment or making changes when things aren't looking too good. But he does actually seem to have changed that a little bit, and was even talking after the game about, you know, the goals that were scored, the signings that he brought in during January. I mean, it's easy when things are going well to kind of start mentioning people, but it does feel like he's had a bit of a change of heart when it comes to his approach to managing.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I do think they look like more of a connected, you know, it's just, we can give them a lot of praise, but they're still going to sit fourth or fifth. The real praise comes when they manage to break into legitimate challengers, when they can finish above an Arsenal or Chelsea. That's when we give him real praise. I do think, I don't know if it's him or the board, you get praise for the people who've been brought in. Like, you're looking at Lundqvist and Zigiati, who's good. They both, like, you know, very, very good signings, we'll say, in the past year. There's just Park, obviously. We thought that losing Clinton would be, you know, very, very detrimental, but Park, consistent starter the entire time. Like, I know she's maybe not going to be on a winning team, but in terms of yourself and a player confidence and her putting herself forward for the England team, I think she's in the right place. And they're being able to manage without Toon as well, which I think in the past they definitely wouldn't have.
They definitely wouldn't have.
So we'll give him moderate praise for now. Because it was a very, very good second half away from home. Villa are just too inconsistent, though.
Yeah. And also, I don't think they've really recovered from some of the signings that they lost at the end of last season and over the summer. And I don't think we've seen that ambition from them that we expected, especially when you look at the kind of work that they were putting in a couple of seasons ago in developing their academy and developing the side of the women's side of the club. It definitely hasn't come through in the last couple of seasons for them. One team who will be very, very relieved is Liverpool, as we said at the top of the show. 2-0 win against Tottenham, which is a massive result for a team that have been struggling a lot this season. It's their first win of the season, but also the fact that it came against Tottenham, who have been relatively impressive over the course of the season. And I think a lot of people have talked about what Ho has brought into the role as manager, and also that all the players seem a lot happier playing there. So this will have come as a big shock.
Yeah, big shot, because like the narrative around the two teams is when are Liverpool going to get their first win of the season, and are Spurs a legitimate part of the race to Champions League? And both those things were answered. Liverpool got their first win of the season, and no, I don't actually think Spurs are in the race right now. Just because when things weren't going well, they lacked anything to kind of spark them into life a little bit. I felt like they were fairly flat. Whereas I thought Liverpool, for the first time, looked like they had more energy than their opposition. I thought Chilagh up front, I thought she was very, very impressive for her debut. Obviously, she came off and Enderby, her replacement, was key to the two goals. But she did Trojan work in terms of holding the ball up and getting up to speed with the pace and power that she needed to bring to that role, because, you know, they're not always going to dominate possession. But yeah, and then Kerry Holland, she's been outstanding for Liverpool, and I think Gareth Taylor praised her after the game, and rightly so, because she's been one player who's been consistently good and consistently driving them forward. And then we have our own Denise, got her first yellow card for Liverpool as well, since like to see, so she's putting herself about there. But you'd have to say that
first goal during the week and first yellow card, I mean,
yeah, I mean, what we want, that's what we expect. But her partnership with, you know, she knows Nagano, so she'll be comfortable straight away. She looked to me to be playing in a more advanced role, but we know, and Gareth Taylor was talking about Liverpool being on the front foot, and yes, when they kind of got into this game and they saw that Spurs were kind of on the ropes, it's okay to be on the front foot, but I think at times Liverpool will have to bank in a little bit, and we all know the work that Denise can do defensively, so I think she will add a lot to the team as a whole in attack and defence there. And obviously we're delighted to get to see her more often, and we kind of spoke a little bit about it last week, but it's a huge decision for her. It's a brave decision for her, going to a struggling team in the WSL, going massive from where she was. So you just have to give her a huge amount of respect for that. And yeah, Liverpool, like, they left it very, very late, 94th, 95th.
I was going to say, the scoreline doesn't actually really show how close the game was for a long time. Like, as you say, 94th and 95th minute. This wasn't, you know, the Liverpool scored in the first half and then kind of polished it off in the second.
Yeah, but at the same time, it was Liverpool that were asking all the questions, rather than the other way around. There was only half chances for Spurs. England had maybe a difficult header. It was Holland hitting the post from the free kick. If you were willing that one in, she deserved that. And you know, they had a few chances that kind of went that way. And it's one of those days where you wonder if the goal will ever come. And then in the end, Nagano played a lovely little ball over the top to Jenna Clark, who was on the rampage up there, and hooked a ball across. And you don't put yourself about there, you know, it doesn't become a chance, and Enderby got herself in there. Koga, obviously unfortunate to get the touch for Spurs, and then Suminen slipped from the restart and let Enderby in again, but just a confident finish from her as well. So it's all brilliant, and we're here praising Liverpool to the hilt, but West Ham won as well. So
I know, it kind of, like, it didn't make that much of a difference, I suppose, in the end, in the context of the weekend.
It didn't in terms of their rivalry with West Ham, but the two of them winning has completely put pressure on Leicester and Everton.
Yeah, and I also just think, for considering how low spirits seem to be in Liverpool as a club, and I think they were suffering a bit more than West Ham were from it, just by watching the way that players are speaking, and it's understandable considering what the club has been through over the season, as we talked about before. But I do.
That's
think
why signings are important, because
well,
they bring fresh energy and like, as much as it's terrible and they've known what had gone before, they're not as burdened by the grief and the heaviness and the worry of going down.
No,
you know, it's fresh. It's a new challenge for them. So I think that was hugely important, getting those extra people in.
Yeah, and I do think, like as you said, with someone like Denise there, she spent so long in one particular league, she's been a captain there, you know, players MVP, like her list of achievements is so long, and I think she's a sort of senior voice that Liverpool were kind of missing on the pitch a little bit. And then just by the pure nature of how she plays and where she can play and what she can contribute, that effect will be felt all over the pitch. It won't just be a case of, you know, it's being felt on one particular third. Like, she will be making sure that presence is felt everywhere. And I do think that is that sort of senior figure that Liverpool need if they are going to attempt to stay up over the next couple of games. You mentioned there, obviously, West Ham also getting a win at the weekend, which was pretty crucial to them. It just puts them slightly ahead of Liverpool by a point, but also equal on points with Everton, who did not have a good weekend. And it feels like there's a little bit of something going on at Everton, just with the way Sorensen's talking about Kelly Gago and her wanting to leave. And, you know, when she came in, was it last January that she joined, that, you know, she gave a real fresh feeling to the place. And I don't know, I just never think it's all that great when a manager is saying in the middle of a season that a player who has been quite good for you wants to leave.
Or naming any names, really, yeah. Unless you're picking someone out for particular praise when they need it. It's an interesting tactic to put someone on blast like that, particularly when it's not like you're stacked. You know, you need everyone pulling in the same direction now that you're in the relegation battle. Everton again, he must be frustrated. Must be very frustrated, because they definitely limited Brighton. You know, we know that Brighton have quality in their front three, but defensively, apart from the goal, Everton were pretty good, pretty solid. Both teams were kind of solid in the game. You know, it could have gone either way. Brighton obviously lucky. I think Roberts kind of said after saying they controlled the game without the ball.
Mm.
I think that's a lovely positive spin to put on things. Like, Everton did have more possession, which they're not used to, but couldn't quite break them down. But they have to be very careful now.
Mm.
Be very careful.
Well, especially with West Ham getting that win over Leicester, you know, that was another one of those games that was going to dictate how the next eight games are going to go in terms of the title race, in that Leicester had some better results, but it was still very, very tight.
Yeah, very, very tight. I think it just shows how, like, having one quality player can make a lot of difference for Everton and Brighton. Like, if you're comparing the two goalkeepers there, if I was Brighton, I'd be looking at Courtney being like, she could be the one that would take us a few places up in the league compared to where they are. They shouldn't be as low as they are. And there's just a lack of confidence that comes out from the back there. And then with West Ham, we were waiting for Martinez to come back into life this season. She found it difficult at the start of the season, but in this game, we saw her back defending on her goal line, clearing chances, and then coming up with a brilliant goal in the 63rd minute. And you need someone to take games by the scruff of their neck. West Ham needed that. At times, Leicester were really, really pushing West Ham. And again, they just kind of left themselves a little bit vulnerable on the counter. The Mushan cross for Lehman to force the OG with a few minutes left. Like, Leicester played a big role in this game, and they needed to win it. Now you're like, it's really hard to know. I think there's, between Leicester and West Ham, there's really not much difference.
No, like, if you were to look at the bottom of the table at the moment, Liverpool bottom on 7, and then West Ham and Everton are both on 8 points. West Ham's goal difference is minus 19, Everton's is minus 11, and then Leicester are on 9 points with minus 15 goal difference. So, you know, that's tight. You know, all it needs is one or two good performances for any of those sides to kind of bring themselves a little bit up. Now, the next team up from all those is London City Lionesses. They're a good 7 points ahead, so they're probably safe enough unless some sort of massive collapse comes.
At Leicester's next 3 games.
I know, that's what I was about to say. So Leicester have Arsenal, then they have United, and then they have Man City. So, like, that's that's a tough run for them.
Yeah.
West Ham have Tottenham, then they have Brighton, and then they have that Everton-West Ham game is probably going to be pretty important. Liverpool's not all that much better. I mean, they have United, Villa, and then Chelsea. So I say Liverpool, Leicester, you're probably looking at their run and saying, if either of those teams can get even 1 point out of those games, that's probably going to be pretty important to them. I mean, none of them have a particularly easy run up. Liverpool, Leicester play each other on the 15th of March. West Ham have United. Yeah. It's going to be an interesting run to the bottom. Who?
Liverpool, Leicester would be huge. Liverpool, Leicester could be.
Liverpool still have to play West Ham as well towards the end of the season on the 26th, the second last day. Who do they have on the last day then? The last day is Everton, Leicester, so that could be very interesting. West Ham have City. Mm-hmm. I mean, the hope would be City would probably be pretty much wrapped up at that stage, and Liverpool have Arsenal, so yeah. There's still a lot of football to be played, Karen, when it comes to that bottom of the table clash. If you were to give a feeling one way or the other.
The bottom half, yeah.
Do you have a kind of feeling as to which way you think it's potentially going to go between those four teams? Or is it too early?
Oh, God.
Who do you think will be the two that are really fighting it out at the end? I feel like at least one of those teams is going to go on a run and is going to pull themselves up a little bit.
I don't know why I think it might be Liverpool.
Are going to be the ones to pull themselves up.
Yeah, even though they're rooted to the bottom and have been since the start of the season. I really don't know. Like, I have just such blind faith in Denise.
To be fair, it's not totally buying
Everton,
play, so.
Everton are on the side. If they stay up, it'll be because they've a really good goalkeeper. That's too hard. It's too hard. Give me a couple more weeks.
Okay, that's fair enough. I'll see you after the next 3 weeks, as we said, probably going to be quite definitive. I mean, I want Everton and Liverpool to stay up for their Irish contingents,
yeah.
Although I would be very surprised that if Everton to go down that Courtney wouldn't be able to get some sort of offer from a club in the WSL. Like, she's far too good. And it's funny, I've actually noticed since she's been off with the injuries and stuff towards the end of last year, I've definitely noticed more of the English commentators and stuff kind of actually giving her the credit. It's almost like when she's gone, people are made to think about how good she is and how worthwhile having her in Everton has been in terms of keeping them up. So I thought that was a bit funny, but hopefully she stays fit for our upcoming qualifiers heading back to Tala. Just announced, I think tickets went on sale last Friday, so people get those for the first round of qualifiers. Should be a very interesting game indeed. Karen, thank you very much, as always, and see you again next week. The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you all again very soon.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball, in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.